Good morning. May it please the court. There are two issues.
Counsel, what's your name?
I'm sorry. Joe Bernstein, representing the appellant, Westridge Group, LLC. There are two issues on the table this morning. The first, obviously, is the merits of the appeal, which has been briefed. The second issue is whether or not this appeal should be dismissed because of allegedly unauthorized filings by Westridge Group's former attorney, Mr. Philip Anselmo. I'll take those one at a time. The first...
Can we please reverse the order of those? Because obviously, if the appeal's to be dismissed, we don't need to get to the merits.
Certainly. Respecting the dismissal, we can be clear about a couple of things. This appeal was initiated in late 2009. In May of 2010, May 21st, 2010, the Montrose County District Court entered an order enjoining Mr. Anselmo from representing to any third parties, including this court, that he is authorized to make any representations on behalf of Westridge Group, LLC. Subsequent to the entry of that order, Mr. Anselmo proceeded in this case as Westridge Group's attorney. He filed an opening brief and a reply brief and an amended opening brief. All of those filings were subsequent to the entry of the Montrose County order. So we can be clear about a couple of things. One, the order entered by the Montrose County District Court was entered about 6 months after this appeal was initiated. So at the time this appeal was initiated, that order had not yet entered. Mr. Anselmo was still authorized to be Westridge Group's, not only its manager, but also its attorney of record. So there can be no debate about Mr. Anselmo's authority to initiate this appeal. The question is whether or not those subsequent filings, in this case, the opening brief, the amended opening brief, and the reply brief, whether the fact that those were not authorized deprives this court of jurisdiction and results in the dismissal of the appeal. Two things about that. One, the fact that the filings were unauthorized does not change the fact that they were made. So if the filings were filed with this court, even if they were unauthorized, they were still made of record with this court. They were still put on file with this court. It is very akin to if an attorney, if a client were to fire his attorney and the attorney were to continue on in the case, those pleadings may be subject to being stricken, but until they're stricken, they're of record. And so they are Westridge Group's filings, despite the fact that Mr. Anselmo was not authorized to file them, and despite the fact that his filings may indeed have been a violation of the Montrose County order.
All right. So your client, though, knows that Mr. Anselmo is not authorized to represent. I mean, they sought the order, the injunction.
That's
they obtained
true.
It.
Yes, that's true.
So, and they know that an appeal has been filed. They make apparently no effort to have a new attorney enter an appearance in this case to file briefs. They do nothing for months. Why shouldn't we strike those briefs, as you just alluded to, and say, no briefs, no appeal?
As a factual matter, my client actually did not know about the existence of this case and did not know about those filings by Mr. Anselmo.
Isn't that all the more reason? I mean, it sounds like you're saying the client didn't even authorize the appeal.
My client, Westridge Group.
Yeah.
My client, Westridge Group, authorized the appeal at the time that Mr. Anselmo was the manager of Westridge Group.
Okay.
He's no longer the manager of Westridge Group. There's new management. I represent the company and the new management. So at the time the appeal was filed, the appeal was, in fact, authorized. Mr. Anselmo was the manager of the company, and he's the one who authorized the appeal. At the time the briefs were filed in this case, those briefs were not authorized by my client. Now, my client actually didn't know about the existence of this case or the filing of those briefs until after those briefs were made. We had no idea that this case was even pending.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry, but that seems to elevate form over substance. Mr. Anselmo was the manager.
Yes, sir.
He filed the appeal.
Yes, sir.
Notice to the manager is notice to the entity.
Yes, that's true.
So how can you say that your client didn't know that the appeal had been filed?
My client received no notice that the appeal had been initiated by Mr. Anselmo.
Mr. Anselmo is your client because he stands in the shoes of the manager.
When Mr. Anselmo was in charge of the company, when he was the sole manager, he refused to share any kind of documentation with the other members of the company. He didn't notify the other members of pending litigation. He didn't let us know that this appeal was being filed. And so after the district court order entered, Mr. Anselmo was ordered by Montrose County to turn over all the records he had to the other members of the company, who are now the managers. He failed to do that.
When did he cease?
He was terminated by written letter. He was removed as manager in March 12th of 2010. He refused.
Everything of which he had personal knowledge before March of 2010, the entity had constructive knowledge of because he was the manager.
Yes, sir, that's true.
Okay, so the entity knew.
Yes, that's true. The other point I would make about the dismissal is that it's Westridge Group, now that it knows about the case, now that it knows about these filings, the question now becomes, well, what does Westridge Group do about that? These filings were unauthorized. What does it do? And it seems to me that Westridge Group really has three options. One, it could just disavow those filings. It could say, well, those filings were not authorized, so they never happened. We are disavowing those, and we would agree that the court should strike them. That's one option. Another option would be for Westridge Group to ratify those and to say, well, they weren't authorized at the time, but as of today, we ratify those filings, and they weren't authorized at the time, but now they are. The third option would be for us to adopt that. So Westridge Group adopts those filings and says, well, they weren't authorized at the time. There can be no question about that, but we adopt them. Adopt. Seems to me that adoption is the best way to go. And the distinction here between ratification and adoption is obviously a temporal distinction. It's a point in time. If we were to ratify those filings, we would say, well, they weren't authorized at the time, and therefore they're voidable on our part, arguably. But we're going to ratify them, and we're going to say that at the time those were made, we're hereby ratifying them, and so they're legitimate as of the time they were filed. Adoption is a different temporal scope, and we're not. If we adopt these things, these filings, then we're not ratifying them as of the date that they were made. We're adopting them for today's purposes, for present adoption. We choose to adopt. Now, if the filings are treated as filed today, because we're adopting today, then that makes them untimely. And arguably, they should then be stricken because they're untimely, even if they are now authorized because we've adopted them. I would say that if the appeal is going to be dismissed for whatever reason, because the filings were unauthorized at the time, or because the filings are untimely, or whatever that basis for the dismissal may be, we would respectfully request that the dismissal be made with leave for us to file a new opening brief. Mr. Anselmo did not do a terribly poor job of briefing the primary issue, which is whether or not the district court erred by holding a hearing respecting the motion for attorney fees. But if the dismissal of this case is going to be made, we would respectfully request that we be permitted to file a new opening brief to do that. If leave is not granted for us to file that opening brief, it really deprives my client of the opportunity to have the appeal heard in the first place.
Well, I get back to what your client knew, and I'm not just talking about constructive knowledge, but actual knowledge. I mean, they know that briefs have been filed. I think you just said that. So they know briefs are getting filed. They do nothing. They know they're being filed by an attorney who they claim doesn't represent them. They do nothing for months.
Why should
we cut your client and give your client a break on that?
Well, it's the Westridge Group, the entity, is certainly my client. There's no question about that. Westridge Group, the entity, knew about the filing of this appeal, authorized the filing of this appeal, and then continued to file briefs even after the entry of the order. Those briefs were filed by Mr. Anselmo, so arguably they were unauthorized filings. That point's not in dispute. I think your question gets more to what was Westridge Group's knowledge after the entry of the Montrose County District Order.
Although we have emails between Mr. Anselmo and your firm talking about filing briefs in this case?
After they were filed, certainly.
Right. And then for months, nothing.
That's true. That's true. I can't argue with that. It's absolutely true. After Mr. Anselmo filed the briefs in this case, he did notify us that those briefs were filed. In fact, that's how we learned about the case, is he sent us a courtesy copy of the brief. He did that after the briefs were filed. Now, at that point, we could have ratified or adopted. My client could have taken those steps to, at that point, get involved in the case. My client, however, felt that, you know, to be perfectly candid with the court, the resources just simply weren't there to become involved in this appeal. Moreover, Mr. Anselmo, I take some issue with the arguments that he made in his brief to the court, but he did cite the proper authority to this court and did appropriately make the argument that the Montrose County District Court erred by not holding a hearing on attorney fees in this issue. I'll turn briefly in the time that remains to the issue, the actual merits of the appeal, which is whether or not the Montrose County District Court erred in failing to hold a hearing respecting the plaintiff's motion for attorney fees. Now, this court has addressed this same issue about four times in the last 20 years, and the Supreme Court has addressed it an additional once in the last 20 years or so. Cheyenne Properties LLC versus Torp, Roberts versus Adams, Rogers versus Westerman Farm Company, and Gray versus State Farm Mutual Auto Insurance Company are all decisions of this court in the last 20 years or so. Indeed, Cheyenne Properties LLC versus Torp is a decision from this court just from last year. That's a 2009 Court of Appeals decision. Now, in all four of these cases, this court's decision was the same. The outcome was exactly the same. This court held in all four cases that when a post-trial motion for attorney fees is filed by one party and the opposing party files an opposition to that motion and requests a hearing, the trial court must conduct a hearing. Now, it doesn't matter whether or not there's any merit to the opposition. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. And it doesn't matter whether or not the opposing party submits affidavits or evidence in opposition to the motion. This court has twice held that even when an opposing party does not provide any evidence in opposition to the request for attorney fees, the trial court must still conduct a hearing.
Which cases are those, please?
Rogers and Gray. I refer the court to Rogers versus Westerman Farm Company. In Rogers, the defendant prevailed at trial and filed a motion for its attorney fees. Plaintiffs opposed that motion and did not submit any evidence whatsoever. They simply filed a written objection and request the hearing. This court held that the trial court is nonetheless obligated to conduct the hearing on the issue, notwithstanding the fact that the plaintiff failed to support its objection with any kind of evidence.
Oh, let me refine my question, which may have not yes. been was ill-framed. Setting aside whether the opposition includes affidavits or other evidence, in either of those cases, did the opposition raise a fact issue by saying that the amount of the attorney fees was not reasonable or something else?
Yes, sir. In the Gray decision, the plaintiff lost at trial and opposed defendant's motion for attorney fees and raised a handful of questions and objections, one of which was the reasonableness of the fees,
okay,
which presents the fact issue.
What fact, I say you advisedly, what fact issue was raised by your client's opposition to the attorney fee motion in the lower court?
The same issue, reasonableness. On page 2 of Westridge Group's opposition to the plaintiff's motion for attorney fees, there is an express objection raised to the reasonableness of the fees. And this is Westridge Group's opposition filed July 17, 2009, on page 2, in the second line. There's a claim for hundreds of dollars of service fees when Havens had only one witness, a local friend of Mr. Havens. They are also unreasonable. I also
you're saying that also unreasonable statement refers to attorney fees, not costs, which are what is described in the prior two sentences and the following two sentences?
Yes, sir. I think if you read the opposition as a whole, it's obviously related to both the fees and the costs.
Okay.
I see that I'm running out of time, so I would leave by respectfully requesting that the court reverse and remand with instructions to the Montrose County District Court to hold a hearing on the objections that have been filed by Westridge Group in opposition to plaintiff's request for attorney fees. I would also request that if the appeal is dismissed, that it be dismissed with leave for us to either reassert the appeal timely or with leave for us to file amended opening brief that would be at this point authorized. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Your Honors. John Stevens, registration number 32115, on behalf of the appellee, Jerry Havens. To address first the motion to dismiss, we first learned over the past couple months that Mr. Havens had presumably been disqualified or either by the district court or by actions by Westridge Group to act on behalf of Westridge Group. When we look at the timeline of what was filed, the opening brief, the amended opening brief, and the reply brief, all those were done after Mr. Havens was no longer authorized to act on behalf of Westridge Group.
Mr. Anselmo, Your Honor.
And when we look at the correspondence from Mr. Anselmo, to which new counsel has not interposed any objection that they didn't receive it, the emails, Judge, that you, or Your Honor, that you brought up, those emails are dated July 7th and July 9th. The opening brief had yet to be filed until July 9th. And so that goes back to the notice of Westridge Group specifically, not Mr. Anselmo or prior counsel. So it would be our position that prior or subsequent counsel had noticed that these pleadings were going to be filed. And at that time, they could have either ratified or adopted those pleadings or taken additional action. And even after that point, when they were clearly put on notice that this appeal process, or at least the briefing part of the process, was ongoing, they could have taken any type of action to either file additional pleadings or do something. To come back on the day of oral argument and say, well, now let's adopt those, which they readily admit would be untimely, seems to be a waste of resources and quite honestly, illogical in the sense that they already had this notice. So when we look at what actually happened, our position is that the briefs are untimely. And unfortunately for Westridge Group, their subsequent counsel had notice of it and they could have taken action at that time. Since the briefs are untimely, the appeal should be stricken.
How are you harmed by what's happened here?
Well, the additional time that my client has to go through additional litigation the interest that accrues, the fact that he's not able to recover on this potential judgment. But
again, a poor question on my part. Let's assume that Westridge Group sent our clerk of court a letter that said, we understand Mr. Anselmo filed an opening brief, notwithstanding the district court's order, and we adopt it. And they did the same thing with the reply brief. How are you any worse off today because that didn't happen than if it had happened?
Well, if they would have given proper notice, but what the argument is now is that they want to either adopt untimely briefs or refile briefs.
No, he made an election. He said, I adopt. So how are you standing here today? How are you worse off because Westridge Group adopted those briefs this morning than you would have been had Westridge Group adopted those briefs seriatim as they were filed?
We would not be, Your Honor. Absolutely, we are not.
Okay, if you're not prejudiced, why should we strike the appeal rather than just going forward and deciding it?
Because we have specific rules and requirements that we all have to follow. And if we allow people to ad hoc change those rules and not follow through, then the entire system that we have in terms of reliance and be able to have some type of anticipation of a just result then changes on a case-by-case basis. Instead, we can, if we have people, for example, who are represented or entities who are represented, we're required to make sure that we follow those procedures. Just if we go back to the underlying case in terms of contracts and duties and things like that, if we don't follow those procedures, then what do we have in terms of any type of anticipation of what may or may not happen? Sure, we can say, well, let's come on the last minute and adopt everything that's been done before, but that's not the way the rules are set up. And we can say theoretically, yes, we're not harmed simply because we have to go through this process, but then that benefits Westridge Group, Mr. Anselmo, and subsequent counsel for not doing anything for several months. For example, we have the same thing if we have a litigation issue with latches. You have unreasonable delay. They could have acted, and they chose not to. Also, what we would argue is that in Mr. Anselmo's opposition to the motion to dismiss, he stated very specifically that the pleadings, the amended opening brief and the reply brief were not even filed on behalf of Westridge Group, but on his own behalf. So in that sense, Westridge Group never even filed.
Mr. Stevens,
yes, Your Honor.
You didn't file this motion until the 12th of January.
Yes, Your Honor.
You knew long ago that apparently there was some problem with the bona fides of Mr. Anselmo, but you decided to wait until a few days before oral arguments.
Yeah, we didn't know long ago. We only learned over the past couple months, and we were trying to reach a resolution with subsequent counsel. We weren't involved in the preliminary injunction. We had no knowledge that that was going on until actually I received a call from Mr. Bernstein informing us that he was now counsel for Westridge Group. So we didn't know this other event was going on last summer.
Why don't you tell us why you think the award of attorney's fees was correct?
In terms of the substance of that part of the appeal, when we look at the rule and we look at the judge's order, and to distinguish that from the cases cited by Westridge Group, those cases specifically dealt with requests for hearings that were statutorily driven. In this case, we have a contract provision that allowed for a prevailing party to be awarded attorney's fees, and that determination is made under Rule 121. And when we look at Rule 121, unless a specific law or legal requirement requires it, a judge is not required to have a hearing. And in this case, when we look at the Adams case specifically, it raised that issue, and it raised an issue of fact that was created by an expert affidavit. We have none of those issues present in this case. In fact, Westridge Group's opposition to the bill of costs does not reference unreasonable attorney's fees. They cite four criteria of why the attorney's fee should not be awarded. The first three simply have nothing to do with the amount or reasonableness. It's simply saying that Havens Excavating should not receive the attorney's fees. The fourth element only deals with costs. It says specifically that the costs are not provided by statute. It doesn't talk about attorney's fees. And when we look at the basis of Westridge Group's opposition to Havens Excavation's request for attorney's fees, there's not a factual issue raised as it relates to attorney's fees.
Did the attorney fees that you sought and were granted from the lower court include not only fees prosecuting Havens collection claim under the contract, but also defending the counterclaims against him?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay.
Well, the opposition says, quote, Havens breached his own agreement and cannot recover fees for his own breach, close quote. Doesn't that at least raise an issue of whether Havens should be entitled to fees on the counterclaim?
No, Your Honor, because that's an issue of who's entitled to fees, not the amount. The appeal issue, Westridge Group, this is the second part of the appeal. The initial appeal, part of that was rejected. This appeal is only whether there should be a hearing on the reasonableness of attorney's fees.
But that wouldn't your client lost on the counter, a part of the counterclaim, correct?
Pardon, Your Honor, yes.
Okay. Why doesn't the quote I just read embrace the question of whether a reasonable attorney fee award can include fees your client spent defending a counterclaim that it lost?
Again, I think it goes back to who's entitled to fees in the first place. And when we look at the trial court's order, the trial court made a determination of looking at all the claims that were made, who was the prevailing party. And based on the prevailing party, said that Havens Excavating was entitled to attorney's fees. That's a separate issue of whether the amount is reasonable. The hearing is whether the amount is reasonable or whatever is being alleged. So I think those are two separate issues. You have, if you're entitled to it in the first place, which the court determined based on the prevailing party provision, Havens Excavating was entitled, then the second analysis is what is that amount? And that's the issue of this appeal. Should there be a hearing on that amount? And again, when we look at the substance of Westridge Group's opposition, there is no claim, supported factually or otherwise, that the fees are unreasonable. The only criticism that the brief raises is that there are potentially some costs. For example, the quote that was raised earlier about the service costs, service of fees on witnesses. So when we look at the substance of that, we don't believe that there's an issue that needs to go back to the trial court under Rule 121 on the prevailing party clause. And that's why we believe that the appeal should be, that part of it should be dismissed irrespective of the motion to strike the appeal. Thank you, Your Honors.
Appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. We will issue a written opinion in due course.